Hello and welcome to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore, producer and engineer Bill Proposky. The voice of the North Shore, of course, is Bill Newell, and Josh Arnold is here on, it's toward the end of April now, almost the last week in April, and it's 42 degrees and raining.
Yeah, well, at least it's not snow, right?
I guess. It'd be nice to have snow during winter, but whatever. All right, so what do we have lined up this morning?
Well, we've got Susan Gilbert Lee, who's the executive director of the Rocky Neck Art Colony. It's our first guest. Dr. Elizabeth Bratt is the was on a prior show, the Rotary show I used to do, and she is a veterinarian, but she's also a candidate for city council in Salem. And Valerie Gilman, the Ward 4 councilor in Gloucester, also a candidate for re-election, is up next.
All right, we're going to fill this hour up starting in just a few minutes. Stay with us.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double-hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Looking for a reliable place to produce your team's uniforms or your business's corporate apparel? Then Sarkisian Sportswear is the place for you. Conveniently located on Route 1 South in Peabody, Mass., Sarkisian Sportswear handles all aspects of your needs, from price quoting to providing visual proofs to production completion. Visit our website, SarkisianSports.com, to view our monthly specials, vendor catalogs, and to request a quote. Remember, Sarkisian Sportswear is the place to go.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and our first guest is Suzanne Gilbert Lee, who is the Executive Director of the Rocky Neck Art Colony. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Josh.
Well, we usually start out and tell us a little bit about yourself, your bio and background, and then we can talk to a little bit about your career and how you landed with the Rocky Neck Art Colony.
Oh, sure thing. Well, I'm a Gloucester native. I was born and raised here. We lived in East Gloucester, Magnolia. I went away for college and stayed away for a while and then moved back to the area in 2006 and started a career in the arts in 2008 at the North Shore Art Association, actually. And after that, worked for Historic New England and then got my job at Rocky Neck Art Colony, which I was very happy at landing, which is a great organization.
Right,
and
here.
I liked what they were doing even before I worked here. So it's been a good place.
So, okay, and you're landed with the, what did you do before the Rocky Neck Art Colony?
I was working for Historic New England, which used to be the Society for the Preservation of New England Antiquities. They changed their name to Historic New England, and they own historic properties across New England, and they have fine art and craft festivals that they run at a couple of their properties, which I was festivals coordinator for those large-scale fine art and craft festivals. The one in Connecticut at the Roseland Cottage usually had about, 8,000 people come through in 2 days, and about 177 artisan vendors, and then we had, entertainment and food vendors, and it was, a whole big long weekend of just, arts and crafts.
Great. And what led you to become involved with the Rocky Neck Art Colony?
Well, I really liked what they were doing. I mean, I kind of had kept tabs with what they were doing. I had known some of the artists who were involved in Rocky Neck. Karen Ristabin, the president, I had worked with her when I was gallery director at North Shore Art Association. She had been a member there. and we worked on a jury together. And I just kind of was watching what they were doing. They had purchased the Cultural Center, which is where my office is now, which is 6 Wansome Street on Rocky Neck, and they were really kind of turning it into a community arts and cultural center with different programming and exhibitions. And I was like, wow, that really seemed like a very exciting idea to me. So when they kind of got the word out that they were going to create a position, their first ever employee, I immediately contacted Karen and I said, I'm very much interested in that.
Great, great. Now, there's a distinction, and you explained this to me off air, about the status of Rocky Neck Art Colony as the longest running or art colony in America, or
we're the oldest continuous working art colony in America. That means that artists have continuously come here to work from really the 1860s on.
Okay, what are some of the activities that the art colony is involved in?
We have 4 major programs that we do. We have the Cultural Center, like I said, which has rotating exhibitions. Pretty much every 5-6 weeks, there's a new exhibit in the Cultural Center. And there's also cultural programming that happens here, like music, concert events, lectures and presentations by artists or different kind of, you know, writers. Or we do a lot of partnership with the Gloucester Writer Center. They have events here. And then even artist demonstrations sometimes and workshops. We have a distinguished artist teacher that's part of our residency program, which is the Get 'Em an Artist Residency, which is another one of our major programs that we invite a distinguished nationally known teacher to come and teach for a week here on Rocky Neck, and that happens in the Cultural Center. And it starts out with a kickoff talk at the Cape Ann Museum, too, which is August 13th this year at 2 o'clock.
Okay.
But the also our other programs is Gallery 53 on Rocky Neck, which is a cooperatively run gallery by a group of art members. And then we also have a historic art trail. So you can go to our website under programs and see the Rocky Neck Historic Art Trail, which is the history of some of the major kind of artists who have come and worked here. Bueller, who did the painting of the man at the wheel statue that you see all around Gloucester and banks and different people's homes and stuff. I have one that was my parents, too, in my house. And Milton Avery, who was a noted modernist painter who came and spent the summers here all through the 1930s. And just Gordon Grant and Homer, painted here. There's Hopper's house also. Homer painted off of 10 Pound Island. So there's just such a rich history of kind of really like a who's who in American art history that kind of came through here. So the art trail kind of gives people a little window into that so that you can walk around the neighborhood on the peninsula and see where some of these events happened.
The artist who used to go out to 10 Pound Island to do his work was who?
Okay, I thought
so, but I wasn't sure. And
yeah, he actually lived there with a lighthouse keeper for a while.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And there used to be a 5-pound island, for people who don't know, which is now where the Judd State Fish Pier is.
Right, exactly.
So what is the you said you have a teacher in residence that comes in August or July or August in the summer. Tell us about that. What will that person do as far as instruction? Who would be typical people who would show up for that kind of, and what kind of instruction would they be getting?
It would be really kind of like a hands-on painting. Usually it's painting, some different style of painting. We've had people who do kind of like abstract portraiture, people who do kind of like expressive painting. The artist who's coming in this year is doing kind of figure drawing. So it's really like open to artists who are really kind of in the thick of their career and they're working towards things and they want to have an opportunity to, train with somebody for, they're usually anywhere from 3 to 5 days, depending on the schedule for each professor, each teacher each year. And it's really a hands-on, get your paints out, set up an easel, or work on tables, depending on the style of the artist. And the talk that kicks off the week for that artist to be here at the Cape Ann Museum is downstairs in the auditorium room. They usually do a whole, like, lecture presentation with visuals. And that's open to the public. Anybody can come to that. And that has any kind of person who's just interested in the arts to hear how, like, a nationally recognized artist works and how they approach their work and what their philosophy is. So that really has a really wide range of appeal to anybody who's just interested in the arts, or beginners to seasoned veterans of the arts who just want to hear how somebody else works.
And, you know, I saw a program a year or two ago and on television, and it was a local gentleman, a guy that lived down the, Curtis, lived down the street from me when I lived on Riverview, and he was
David Curtis, yeah.
And he was but he was introducing and talking with and about Tommy Heinsohn and about Tom as an artist, and I found that fascinating, and watching them paint, and the way that Heinsohn would look at something and then paint it, and it wasn't like someone who drew something. I mean, he had a way of transforming the canvas into the picture, but you didn't, you know, I found it really interesting the how people go about doing what they do.
Well, and that's one of the beautiful things about art, because there's so many different ways that different artists approach things. So that's why it's really great to be able to bring in new people and have, you know, like a new sensibility brought into the mix that artists can work and they find something new that they can bring back to their own art. Because a lot of, you know, most artists, especially like kind of the old masters, there was always this idea of pushing and learning new things, and that's kind of the spirit of kind of the Rocky Neck Art Colony anyway, because historically a lot of the artists who came here were people who were pushing boundaries and trying new things, like the early American Impressionists like John Twachtman, and then you have like modernists like Stuart Davis and Marston Hartley, who, you know, were doing different things. Hartley was painting Dogtown, where a lot of the other artists who were coming and doing plein air work were painting, you know, the ocean scenes and the harbor front and the boats and everything like that. So there's that tradition of people kind of pushing boundaries and trying new things is what the Rocky Neck Art Colony nonprofit today is hoping to support in our membership of contemporary artists who are trying new things. And that's kind of the mission of the Cultural Center exhibitions, is to highlight and showcase work that's really exciting and new and different that maybe you don't see on Cape Ann. Because there's other organizations on Cape Ann who really, you know, portray the tradition, and like the Cape Ann Plein Air Festival that's happening now, that really kind of builds on that plein air festival. And that's, you know, they do that so well and work with the art associations in the area. So Rocky Neck wants to focus on something a little bit different, but that's also part of the history.
Great. What, do you paint?
I'm a creative writer, actually.
Okay. But you know, is there a time when people? Let me put it this way: Is there are folks who paint as part of the Rocky Neck Art Colony? Are they more predominantly folks whose medium is oil or pastel or acrylic or watercolor?
All different kinds, really. Yeah, our current exhibit that actually the last day of the current exhibit in the Cultural Center is called Rocky Neck Now 2017, and it's our spring members show, and it's a show that really kind of showcases what our members are working on now, and it is such a broad range of medium because it's 2D art, so we've got oil painters, pastel, collage, mixed media, watercolorists, photography, we have sculpture, we have jewelers, we have fine ceramics. So it's really, we don't focus on a specific genre except for just visual arts is kind of our focus.
I watched, we used to do the Rotary Club does the pancake breakfast every year at the Waterfront Festival, but when we were on the boulevard, there would be people down there painting, and I was always fascinated by people painting and just, you know, I didn't want to get in their way, but if they would answer questions, and I saw a couple of artists, and they had like a sketch pad. off to the side where they were painting, and they would sketch something out, you know, like in pencil on the sketch pad, and then paint it. And they said that there was a technique that they learned that they didn't draw what they were going to paint, but if they could draw it, then they could paint it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really fascinating. I'm not a painter. I've tried and I enjoy it, but my wife said, "You're not going to show those to anybody," kind of thing.
Yeah, no, there's different ways to approach it, and especially painters who are painting, like when they're outside and they're doing representational work. And we do have members who do that type of work as well, plein air painters. We had a great conversation of an event last weekend called "The Conversation About Art and Life." That had a panel discussion for some of the artists in this exhibit, and that discussion came up in the talk. We had like a packed house. We had probably like almost 50, 60 people here talking about how the approaches to art and that representational painters, it's not like they can actually paint exactly what they see. They're painting kind of their impressions of it, or they're trying to, you know, create their experience of what they're seeing. And you know, doing those sketches and those different types of techniques to figure out what works in the painting, because it's still all about composition, how the piece of art is created, and then, you know, how they fill in those details within their, you know, kind of overlying composition of how they're putting the image together.
Yeah, it's, I found that when I painted, I would get, I was too impatient. I'd be painting something and I'd have it half done, and then I'd make a mistake and I'd spend the next hour trying to fix the mistake I made, and then I'd leave it and say, come back another day. But anyway, it's a special kind of person who engages. Is there a couple minutes left? What about sculpture and so forth? How much of that is part of our Gloucester's heritage? And are there a lot of sculptors today?
Big part. I mean, look at Anna Hyatt Huntington, who did the Joan of Arc statue in downtown. Walter Hancock, who was one of the Monument Men that they did the movie about. He was a Gloucester artist. Demetrios was a sculptor, too, who was married to Virginia Lee Burton, who was part of the Solid Cove Designer. So there's a lot of sculpture history here, too.
My older brother, Jason, was an estate manager on the Weems estate. And she had she was a quite a sculpturist.
Absolutely.
And had her stuff is spread out all over the country, I guess, but a lot of stuff at Harvard and in Boston and Cambridge and so forth. Yeah, great big animals.
Heidi Dowen, who's the actress who's really involved with the Gloucester Stage Company, her grandfather, Charles Dowen, was the sculptor who did the large Native American chief in front of the MFA.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Well, that's really interesting. And is that on your website?
No, that's not on
the website. Well, that's great. Maybe we get that up there. There's a lot of good history there.
It's so rich.
Yeah.
There's so much information about, I mean, the archives at the Cape Ann Museum has an enormous amount of information about all of the artists who have worked on Cape Ann. They have, like, file cabinets filled with artists who have worked on Cape Ann. It really is like a who's who in American art.
Well, you know, I growing up on Mount Pleasant Avenue, I remember meeting Charles Olson, the poet, who was Charles Oates Olson, the poet, who was a great big guy, scared the hell out of me. I mean, it was just I'm 6'5", but when I was 3 foot whatever, this guy looked like the biggest guy I'd ever seen in the world. But for one of my reports and grade school, I remember doing a report on him, and could not understand some of his poems, but they were very famous and very so a lot of talent, creative talent has found its home here on Cape Ann and in Gloucester in particular.
Absolutely. I mean, literary, too. I mean, you've got the T.S. Eliot Foundation just bought the house that the Eliots used to come in summer here in East Gloucester, and they're turning it into a writer's retreat. So there's the cultural history of Gloucester, and cultural too. I think you can include all of the arts, all of the fishing heritage, the quarry working, all of that kind of makes us who we are now today, and enjoying all of the wonderful like proliferation of just there's you know art exhibits and all sorts of things going on around town. And Rocky Neck is having, you know, the Madfish Wharf is being renovated, so we're going to have new galleries opening up, hopefully this season. We're hoping that it'll be done for this year, but that'll really, you know, kind of revitalize and add more to the artistic and cultural offerings of the city. So there's just so much to do.
Great. Just in wrapping up, any upcoming events that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, we have a couple. We do a big community event in May. We have a Rocky Neck 5K. It's at Rocky Neck 5K.com. We have a website for it that we invite community members and everybody to go for a 5K run or walk. And we have a partnership with the Studio Restaurant, so there's a brunch afterwards for all of the participants. And it's really a fun time, and we call it Run for the Arts. And the new exhibit opening up here at the Cultural Center is a show called Alchemy, which is three artists reassemble the past. And that opening is on Saturday, April 29th from 4 to 6.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and I wish you the very best of success going forward, and appreciate certainly all the work that you're doing to promote the arts in the Rocky Neck Art Colony.
Oh, thank you so much. And also just to let everybody know, too, that, you know, come Memorial Day weekend, or actually just beforehand, May 20th, a lot of the seasonal galleries will be opened up, too, on Rocky Neck. So there's some year-round, and a lot more will be open for the season. So thank you so much for having me on your show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Suzanne. Take care.
All
bye
right,
now.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
Gloria Food Store is still Beverly's number one deli, and no matter what New England weather is thrown at us, Gloria is open. With fresh bread delivered from Sunray Bakery every morning, Gloria can provide party platters, calzones, hot trays, cold trays, salad trays, and finger sandwiches for whatever you have planned. Call in your order at 978-922-3613, stop in at 268 Rantoul Street, or visit GloriaFoodStore.com.
People come in, take a seat, you're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night, satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Dr. Elizabeth Ratt, who is a veterinarian in Salem, a fellow Rotarian, and also she is a candidate for City Council at Large in Salem, Mass. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. I'm very glad to be here.
Well, I know we've talked. We certainly know each other, and we've talked about some of your work through the Rotary program I used to do. But for our listening audience, tell us a little about your background, and then we can get into some politics and stuff.
Sure, happy to do that. I grew up in Belmont, west of Boston, and after vet school, moved to the North Shore because I love the beaches, and worked as an associate in Lynn doing emergency calls and working a lot at North Shore Animal Hospital for 5 years. Bought a house in Salem 27 years ago and loved it here. We're still in our starter house. Love our little Leave It to Beaver neighborhood and established a practice in Salem, a veterinary practice. We now have 4 doctors, and we love working with the dogs and the cats and the iguanas and the birds and the guinea pigs and the rabbits. So I've been doing that. I've been doing veterinary medicine for 30 years. And I want to give back a little bit to the city, so I've decided to run for city council in Salem as an at-large councilor.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what your thinking was there. This is your first time out running for office, but you've held a point of elective office in Rotary, and you've certainly been involved in other types of community activities over the years. What prompted you to want to jump into the political arena?
Well, I've been involved in my first presidency that I can recall was as the president of the PTO for the Federal Street School in Salem, and I found that to be really kind of an interesting point in time. That was when we were building a new school in Salem, and there was a lot of controversy about where to site the new Bowditch school. And I found it fascinating that we held a city meeting with a city councilor, the whole city council, and an individual. Salem was thinking about a land taking back then, and a local citizen from the Gallows Hill area, who's a landscape architect, said, "Hey, why don't you've never thought about building the school in front of the high school instead of in back of the high school?" And from that meeting came that good idea. Everything came to fruition. This wonderful new school is now in front of the high school. So that's when I realized that getting the community together and talking to people face-to-face can lead to much better outcomes for the community, and that controversy and conflict, when done in a good way, without being hostile and assassinating people's characters, you can really use the conflict to come out to a better outcome. So,
great.
The Sanctuary City controversy in Salem drew me to this, but that's not my only issue. I know it's very controversial, but I do believe in general that as Salem progresses into the future, we need to operate from a position of courage rather than a position of fear. And so I was seeing in the political arena people being fearful of lack of federal funding or of being targeted for federal review in the area of undocumented people. I'm getting into this because I want to see the city government operate from a position of courage.
You know, the lever that the federal government has over states and cities is its funding. In Massachusetts, we passed Proposition 2.5 many years ago, and a piece of that was there would be no unfunded mandates. Well, the federal government does not have such legislation. They choose to mandate but not fund. I'm an advocate for children with special needs and a mediator, but the leverage that I have when I'm working with a school system that may be non-compliant or maybe discriminating against children or in some way is to, you know, threaten with, you know, an action suit that, you know, in the long run could jeopardize their funding. And if you're found to be discriminating against people, the federal government reserves the right to pull its funding from your community or your state. And people certainly don't want to do that because there are so many different ways that cities and towns would not be able to meet its needs if they don't have the funding. So this, the whole controversy over the president's immigration policy and was really, in my view, the first time in a long time that you've really heard the bureaucracy, you know, beating its chest, if you will, about that lever, that leverage that they have. People would say it, but you know, you'd also realize that there's a lot more to it than that. So in the context of whether you're a sanctuary city or not, I mean, the discussion is focused on a lot of people are only going to lose money if they don't follow the law.
Exactly.
They're not saying if you're a sanctuary city, you're going to lose your money. They're saying if you're a sanctuary city and you have someone who's wanted for a crime that's a felony or better, and you know the law enforcement of that community needs to work with the federal law enforcement community.
Right.
In order to
Salem and the David Epley, sitting councilor David Epley, and our mayor Kim Driscoll and Jeff Cohen is also a candidate for councilor at large. They consulted with the ACLU on the laws to make sure that Salem was in full compliance with the federal law and that the police will cooperate with ICE agents if there is a criminal in town that needs to be taken care of. So the Sanctuary City Ordinance actually complies with all federal law.
Yeah.
No funding can be taken away from the City of Salem based on the passing of that ordinance.
So
that's why there should not be any concern with loss of federal funds over this particular ordinance.
There was some rumble online. Rockport was talking about being a sanctuary town, and people were, well, we're going to lose our funding and this, that. I said, you know what? I can't imagine a scenario where Rockport law enforcement wouldn't work with or bend over backwards to work with federal law enforcement on anything. I said, years ago when I was working my father's landscaping business in the summer, I got pulled over by a Rockport policeman because a guy on the back of the truck had his shirt off. Okay, so I mean, if they, you know, so that's not a community. So I think that a lot of it is hype and not substance, but we'll move on from that.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, this is Rick Moore. I'm a co-host with Josh. And, you know, in today's Salem.
Hi, Rick.
Good morning, and I applaud your efforts in Salem. The stuff you guys are talking about right now, it's very emotional in Salem, and maybe you could talk a little bit about the petition or the neighborhood, I don't want to call them clashes, but the emotion that's going on in the City of Salem right now, and what's being done. It seems to me that all parties are very much emotionally concerned to a high degree and are trying to work this thing through.
Well, it's interesting because I'm walking the city to get signatures to get on the ballot right now, and my goal is to talk to 1,000 people before I even turn my papers in. And so I'm talking with a lot of people, and if I don't bring up the Sanctuary City bill, I'd say 95% of the people that I talk to, when I say, what issues do you care about, Salem, 95% of them do not even bring up the Sanctuary City ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
So there are many other concerns in Salem. I have had a couple doors slammed in my face. They won't even give me a signature to get on the ballot. Because if they ask me, where do you stand on the Sanctuary City bill, I say on the ordinance, I say I'm in favor of it. But that's a small, small minority of people. Most people care about the traffic in the community. They care about the noise. They care about the trees getting cut down on the Kernwood Golf Course. Some people think too many trees are being taken down. Other people want trees taken down outside the fence. I mean, there's all kinds of little small community issues, neighborhood issues, traffic, when I ask people, they're much more concerned with that.
I'm glad you brought that up because I'm wondering.
I'm walking the city basically because I would like to speak to people about not being fearful and realizing that the power that they have and encouraging them to vote on September 12th. If we have more than 8 candidates for councilor at large position, we'll have a primary on September 12th. So I just find it nice to communicate with people through a medium other than Facebook or email. And people are gravitating to that. I went up Orange Street a couple nights ago, and I ended up in the garages, the two separate garages, because I saw people doing carpentry in their garages. And they're all like, hey, this is great. We're glad you poked your head in our garage. We're glad to talk to you about Salem issues or happy to sign your papers and never a mention of the Sanctuary City Bill, because I think people realize that's not the only issue in the city. And I'm just walking to make people realize that we have power. Our democracy, every single vote matters. There have been races in the city that have been won by 13 votes, 100 votes, small numbers. And to remind people, you know, remember, we brought Market Basket to its knees a couple of years ago. You know, the whole corporate structure of Market Basket was changed by people just opting, you know, where to shop. And I think people can do that with their voting, with what they choose to buy, and gathering together and for whatever issue they're in favor of, whether it be conservative or liberal, and voicing it and speaking to people in a respectful way when they disagree.
Yeah, you know that. You were talking about going door to door. We've got a few minutes left. I guess, you know, what are some of the other issues that you're hearing from people about that are really on their minds in terms of Salem?
Well, one of the guys in the garage, which is one of the garage guys, his big issue is he's so tired of the acrimony and the character assassination, and I've heard from a number of people, they just want a reasonable person who is willing to reach across the aisle and get something done.
Yeah.
I've talked to people about, you know, protection of our, people want our environment protected. They care about our oceans. They care about protecting our water supplies because we had a pipeline, a natural gas pipeline that almost went in right near where the Ipswich River is. It was going to go through Linfield and Danvers and affect the Ipswich River. So people care about the environment. They care about the trees. They care about our ocean being protected, and they want our water supplies to be there for us.
Yeah.
And noise. Surprisingly enough, a couple people brought up that they, one person works on a nonprofit to limit noise. She says that, you know, one out of every 7 people over, I forget what age she said, maybe 50, well, there's gradual hearing loss that we all attribute, she said, to getting older. And she said a lot of it's not just the fact that we're older, it's that we've been exposed to deafening amounts of noise, and that has caused hearing loss. So she's on a nonprofit and advocating for, you know, muffling the motorcycles. And another person said it wasn't the motorcycle so much as really, she lives on North Street in Salem, Route 114. She said it's the booming stereos.
Yeah.
She's in her own house, and she hears the booming stereos. So
Well, Gloucester has an ordinance about what decibel you can play a car or household radio, and I'm going to guess you folks do too, but it might be just something that gets lost in the shuffle with the abandoned cars and so forth on properties and stuff.
Exactly. The police have a lot to attend to, and
they're a bigger fish to fry. Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best in your upcoming campaign, and maybe as the campaign gets underway, we can have you back and talk a little further about some of the issues that in the race in Salem.
That would be fantastic. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thank you, Dr. Brett.
Bye.
Thank you. take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, this is Saka Sarkisian, owner of Sarkisian Sportswear, located on Route 1 South in Peabody. We are a sports team dealer and custom apparel distributor that can handle all of your team's or company's uniform and apparel needs. So stop by and visit us at 182 Newbury Street in Peabody to see our storefront. Visit with our friendly and helpful staff and let us help you get the right fit for your program. Also, you can visit our website, SarkisianSports.com, to view our monthly specials and learn more about us.
MSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Valerie Gilman, who is the incumbent Ward 4 counselor in the city of Gloucester, and she's also a candidate for re-election. Valerie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Josh. It's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, just we usually ask folks, I know you've been on the show before, but tell us a little bit about your background, and then we can get into some of the work that's going on in City Hall this year.
Well, I have about a 25-year background in human resources. My most recent job was I was vice president of HR for a Fortune 500 company in Wakefield, and did a lot of international travel, a lot of work in strategic planning. And when my youngest son, Jared, was born, I started doing some consulting work. I went back up my master's degree at Lesley University and then decided that I was going to get involved with some city politics, and I got involved on the school committee for 6 years. I was chair for a couple and vice chair for a couple, and it really kind of made me more and more interested in service, and took 2 years off, and now I'm back as city councilor for Ward 4, which has about 4,800 residents. So I'm enjoying it. This is my, 16th month. It's been busy, and I'm really feeling like I'm starting to understand how to navigate and get things done for my constituents, and I'm really enjoying my role on the city council.
Well, you do a lot in terms of constituent services. I know that you meet, you have regular meeting spots with folks, and I see the postings on social media. What are some of your observations about the feedback you get from the constituency in Ward 4?
Well, I really find that, you know, fewer and fewer people are reading the traditional newspapers these days. So my goal is always to try to get them aware of what's happening in the city. So what I do every week is I post the upcoming meetings. I take it off the city website. I put links to the agendas. And I always put an extra touch on the particular hearings that might be important to the folks in Ward 4, like Willow Rest parking or residential parking or speed studies on streets in our ward. So I try to just kind of hone in to get them interested. And I'm really always happy to see about 10 new hits from new people every week on my
www.facebook.com/Val Gilman Ward 4, the number 4. It's not really a Facebook page, but it's just a way that I can reach out. And then I post these throughout the ward at Richdale's and the Willow Rest and Lanesville Package Store and the Lanesville Community Center, so people can kind of see what's going on if they might not be in a mood where they're going to be fooling around with their computer and looking on the city website. So that's important. And then I've been really enjoying my Friday mornings at the New Cove Cafe, 7:30 to 8:30 in Lanesville. And the police chief meets with constituents in our ward as well every other Friday. He's with me, which is great. And then I'm at the Captain Hook's before the Tuesday, second and fourth meetings of City Council, just to be available for folks that are in Ward 4-1. And I've had a number of meetings. Recently, I had a Ward 4-1 meeting, and I co-facilitate with Council Orlando, who also lives in Ward 4-1. And then also did a session at Lanesville Community Center for Ward 4-2, and I was delighted to have both Mike Hale, DPW Director, and Chief McCarthy, Police Chief, there with me, and that was really great in terms of strong turnout, about 50 people. So, you know, I'm trying to be accessible. I'm trying to get back to people on a timely basis. I'm not afraid of giving people my cell phone and trying as best I can to be service-oriented, because to me, the more people know about the services in the city and are happy with how issues are being solved, the better they feel about paying taxes and about what the city is doing for them, as opposed to them just feeling that they're always paying taxes but then it for me. So I think I'm making headway.
Good.
And I'm working hard with administration, with you know, police, fire, community development, DPW, because those are my partners, and in order for me to try to help solve issues in my ward, I need to be on good terms with the folks that help service people in the administrative role, and the mayor's office has been very supportive as well. So that's kind of what I'm doing right now. And
the charter doesn't distinguish that the ward councilors are to handle constituent complaints and the at-large or bigger picture people or anything like that, and yet since the inception, there's been that division, if you will, or that, you know, if you got a problem with the fire hydrant needs to be painted, or the catch basin needs to be cleaned out, or the sign is down, you don't call the at-large council, you call the ward councilor. How much traffic does that generate for you as Ward 4 councilor?
I would say every day I probably get 2 to 3 calls.
Okay.
And, you know, I have a big ward with different needs in all different parts of the city. So
yep.
I would say I average 2 to 3 calls. And a lot of them are pretty simple. This is what you need to do. This is how you connect. This is how you fill out a secret fix if you want to report an issue. And then I'll follow up and send them some literature that will help them be able to independently solve the problems in the future, and I ask them just to call me back if they're bumping into a barrier. So that seems to be about the common amount of people. So it's a lot. Sometimes it's more. After a snowstorm, I probably get 5 to 10. People are calling about sidewalks, about plowing, about different issues, parking, it's pretty busy.
I always remember the story about a woman that when we first had the charter, a woman had called and her ward counselor, Ward 1, which happened to be John Bell, and said that I've been trying to get through the DPW to get her plowed out and what have you, or the catch basin was, you know, and the water was backing up and whatever, and he tried and he couldn't get anybody. John Bell finally got in his car, went over and he shoveled it out the lady himself.
And
it made the talk of the times, and I remember him saying, I did this because it was the only way to get it done, but I really didn't want it I didn't want it to get out there so that everybody was calling him when they needed to be shoveled out. So anyway, I know there's a lot that comes before the city council, and you're one of five members of the council who are new to this city council. You've certainly held elective office as a school board person and school committee chair. What has that learning curve been like in terms of understanding the, I don't want to say cultural mores, but the methodologies and processes that are perhaps unique to this city council or unique to this city that you have to follow? It's not just knowing the issues, it's knowing how to work within certain frameworks when articulating positions. What's
right.
that?
And what I traditionally try to do is when I'm talking to a person, I try to put in front of them what the ordinance is that I'm referring to. So I'll make a copy or copy and paste an ordinance and I'll send it to them so that they understand what the city order says. And same goes with zoning. If they want, you know, new signage, but I tell them that that's not signage that's permitted right now. So, you know, because I would have to put in a council order to change the zoning on, say, for example, Lanesville Center, where we changed all the signage to be able to appease the businesses down there, because they were finding that a lot of folks coming to the quarry for the day were parking in the spots and hurting the businesses of the package store and the Kohl's and the post office and the hairdressers, and that was a problem. So, you know, we had to change all the council orders, and that requires kind of a long process of public hearings and subcommittee, and I always try to do a good job trying to make people understand that, you know, hey, yeah, we can work on this, but it's going to take a couple of months, and then there's a 30-day wait after the council vote until it becomes effective. So so my feeling is that the more information you give constituents, the more they understand what the process is. And sometimes it's long from where they're sitting, but I find that accurate information is really helpful for them understanding the city governance. And of course, I always loop back to the city charter to make sure that we're following our charter. And
of course, we don't always do that, but
no, and we can always do a better job. And you know, I always try to check into that when something is feeling like, well, does that sound right? And I'll go and I'll investigate and make sure that we're doing the right thing. So you know, I think it's a lot of research. It's a lot of tools, having the tools in place, and then knowing what's happening in the city and making sure that I always communicate. I mean, little things, something as silly as putting up some, getting the annual permit for some piers in our ward. You know, I always like to let the people know that are concerned or have piers that this is the permitting time for this. So I'll send them a copy of the upcoming meeting where they're going to be doing the annual licensing of some of the dock space in my ward. And because I just want them to know what's going on. So, you know, it's a lot of research, a lot of follow-up, but there's a lot of good data on the city website. I wish everybody would take time just to navigate and understand what's out there, because 90% of the questions that come to me can be found on the city website, but I'm always very happy.
Well, the city website is a busy website, and it's not it's sometimes like a roadmap at Cambridge. Is you know the building you want to get to, but you can't get there. I've suggested to others that the city would be well served having a website committee to look at what other communities do and how they function and what things they do and how they showcase
and we do best practices for different things. I mean, I've brought through a couple of orders this year with the council where we've done, you know, I've done significant outreach to find out what best practices is, ranging from the coyote feeding practice, feeding coyotes. That was that was kind of major, and we were surprised when we learned that there's some residents that were deliberately feeding coyotes, and that was making them more comfortable in people's backyards and intimidating their dogs. And so Council Memard and I joined together and went through that. We've changed some of our ordinances on where we can dispose of dog feces. It sounds silly, but our old policy was a little bit outdated, and we changed that, and I did best practices of about 14 municipalities and all the Board of Health, and put that all together. So when I was recommending the new order changes, the counselors and the Board of Health and the DPW knew what other cities were doing. So I'm always one to do best practices and reach out and do a little bit of homework before I just throw out my ideas, because I think it just strengthens the evidence that I collected to make the right decisions for the city. So.
Well, I thought that somebody had might have conveyed to you, you know, growing up in East Gloucester, what we used to do is we would trap the coyotes and then we'd just let them go down around Revere Street. I said that to somebody recently, and I was hoping that would get back to you. But anyway, you brought in an ordinance to do something with the flags that scuba divers use. Tell us about that.
Well, that was kind of interesting. It kind of started where I was surprised that we found some scuba divers on Plum Cove Beach, and I called the chief, and he was equally concerned, and then we learned that scuba diving is actually okay on the beaches, which kind of amazed me. But I became more inquisitive about that and started looking at the mass law versus our own law, and felt that, you know, we should be consistent with the Massachusetts law on how far boaters need to be away from dive flags and how dive flags have to stay close to people that are scuba diving. And, you know, because if we have all these outsiders, I don't want to say outsiders, but people from out of town boating in our waters, which frequently they do, but yet our harbor master, our police boat, are the ones that are patrolling, it's much easier if the people out there know that we have similar rules on the water with divers that they do throughout Massachusetts. This way it makes it easier for us to enforce. So I had the full support. I went in front of the Waterways Board. I thought it was respectful to their opinions, and brought it forward just as an advisory, and talked to the new harbor master, and they agreed. I talked to some lobstermen, and they agreed. So I did do the research in advance, and that was kind of a no-brainer, but it was just something that every once in a while we find something that's out of date, and my instinct is we need to make them current with municipal law and what's actually happening in the city in Massachusetts, mass.gov. So,
great.
Yeah.
Well, no, thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best in your upcoming campaign, and perhaps we can have you back later for another interview as the campaign gets further underway.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Josh. It's
thank you, pal.
A pleasure.
Take care. Have a good weekend. Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
So the silly season is getting underway early this year. Not that was, mind you, but I'm talking about the elections and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
People are starting early. There's a big headline out of Salem today that a former city councilor is going up against Senator Joan Lovely for the Senate seat from there, the state Senate seat. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah, well.
Already.
Yeah, well, the state race will be next year, right?
Yep, and that's, as I said, they're starting a year early for that.
You would for that, because for the sheer amount of money that you have to raise for that kind
of
campaign.
Well, shouldn't the next presidential candidate campaign start getting underway soon? I mean,
what makes you think it's not?
Oh, well, there you go. Well, I know that Clinton's been running since, what, 08, or was running since 08, or whatever.
I think Clinton was running since 92. But
well, that could be. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so what's in the future?
A lot of different people, different walks up and down the North Shore, and I'll have a good show next week and the next couple of weeks. I don't have names that I can give you, but a lot of people we've talked to are interested, and it's just a question of who's in what slot. And
sure,
so forth.
Sure. Yeah, and it's a tough time. I understand that. So we got to, you know, I know that you're working well ahead of the issue to try to figure that out, and I'm not always cooperating with you on dates, so appreciate it.
We're good.
Okay. All right, that's Josh Arnold. Our producer and engineer is Bill Proposky. The voice of North Shore is Bill Newell. I'm Rick Moore. Have a great weekend.